Good morning, everybody, and welcome. We are Lizzie and Justin from Third Space, and we're here again for another week in our ongoing practice of diving deep into a source, Lizzie, and entering into conversation together. And I want to say welcome to you, Lizzie, for doing this with me so faithfully, which has become so extraordinarily meaningful. And welcome to everybody else who's joining us. So we know that many of you join us live on Facebook. We have a Facebook group called Turning Towards Life, which you're very welcome to join. And then we're in lots of other places on all the podcast platforms. And we have a lovely turningtowards.life website. You can catch us on YouTube. So welcome to all of you, whether you're with us live or listening at some unknown point in the future after we've had this conversation, you're all equally welcome. And welcome to the many of you who are joining us for the first time. We know that this conversation keeps on reaching more and more people, and it's a great, great delight to us that it does. And all of you who are new here are just as welcome as everyone who's been with us for the past four and something years. And I'm feeling excited this morning, Lizzie, because in our Third Space world that has given, that really gave birth to this project, to Turning Towards Life, we've got some exciting things coming up. Our two-day Foundations of Coaching program, which is online, so joinable from anywhere in the world, is on the 25th to 26th of April. And really an extraordinary way to get into the conversation that gave birth to this conversation, Lizzie, the kind of background from which all of this comes. And we're also launching a living leadership program called Essential Self Leadership, which is at the end of May, which is also online, which is really about how might any of us who lead anything, from large scale organizations to a family to an art project to a community, can lead from the place in us that's most in contact with depth and courage and wisdom and compassion. And it feels incredibly exciting to me that all of that is happening. So I thought to mention all of that before we got going, because sometimes people don't know about it. And you can head over to wearethirdspace.org and root around there and find all the details. And all of that is really a background to our conversation today as well. And you've chosen such an excellent and timely source for us, Lizzie, which I'm very grateful for. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for saying all of that, Justin. So today we have this wonderful source by the extraordinary Father Richard Rohr. And I'm having a moment of gratitude for Richard Rohr and all of the various ways I've encountered him over the years, and one of them being this lecture that he did once inside Google that was on YouTube or something. And I remember watching him kind of sitting in amongst people, being a kind of bridge between the kind of bigger corporate cultural norm world that we have, and dropping some excellent things into the conversation that were so countercultural and yet so gently and brilliantly and intelligently brought. So I'm really grateful for the marriage that he is between worlds and how accessible I feel his language is, his teaching is, but also how profound at the same time. So I really admire him for that. And in this source, we're talking about fear and love and soul. So here we go. This is by Father Richard Rohr. And by the way, this is in one of his weekly newsletters that comes out from the Center for Action and Contemplation. And you can sign up to them. Anybody can sign up to them if you would like to. Well, I'll put the link in the chat afterwards. So fear is contraction. Fear unites the disparate parts of our false selves very quickly. The ego moves forward by contraction, self-protection, and refusal by saying no. Contraction gives us focus, purpose, direction, superiority, and a strange kind of security. It takes our aimless anxiety, covers it up, and tries to turn it into purposefulness and urgency, which results in a kind of drivenness. But this drive is not peaceful or happy. It's filled with fear and locates all its problems as out there, never in here. The soul or the true self does not proceed by contraction, but by expansion. It moves forward not by exclusion, but by inclusion. It sees things deeply and broadly, not by saying no, but by saying yes, at least on some level, to whatever comes its way. Can you distinguish between these two very movements, these very different movements within yourself? Fear and contraction allow us to eliminate other people, write them off, exclude them, and somehow expel them, at least in our minds. This immediately gives us a sense of being in control and having a secure set of boundaries, even holy boundaries. But people who are controlling are usually afraid of losing something. If we go deeper into ourselves, we will see that there is both a rebel and a dictator in all of us, two different ends of the same spectrum. It's almost always fear that justifies our knee-jerk rebellion or our need to dominate, a fear that is hardly ever recognized as such because we're acting out and trying to control the situation.
Thank you, Lizzie. So I'm going to read it again. And as well as finding it, of course, on the Richard Rohr's website, we'll post this in the notes for the podcast and all of those places, so you can always find it with this conversation. Fear unites the disparate parts of our full self very quickly. The ego moves forward by contraction, self-protection, and refusal by saying no. Contraction gives us focus, purpose, direction, superiority, and a strange kind of security. It takes our aimless anxiety, covers it up, and tries to turn it into purposefulness and urgency, which results in a kind of drivenness. But this drive is not peaceful or happy. It's filled with fear and locates all its problems as out there, never in here. The soul, or the true self, does not proceed by contraction, but by expansion. It moves forward not by exclusion, but by inclusion. It sees things deeply and broadly, not by saying no, but by saying yes, at least on some level, to whatever comes its way. Can you distinguish between these two very different movements within yourself? Fear and contraction allow us to eliminate other people, write them off, exclude them, and somehow expel them, at least in our minds. This immediately gives us a sense of being in control and having a secure set of boundaries, even holy boundaries, but people who are controlling are usually afraid of losing something. If we go deeper into ourselves, we will see that there is both a rebel and a dictator in all of us, two different ends of the same spectrum. It's almost always fear that justifies our knee-jerk rebellion or our need to dominate, a fear that is hardly ever recognized as such because we're acting out and trying to control the situation.
Thank you, Justin. My goodness, I was getting, as you were reading, I was getting kind of waves of wondering what the world looks like when it's made from expansion versus when it's made from contraction. Like on every little level, a decision made from a contracted place is very different from a decision made from an in the expansion that this is talking about. An interaction coming from expansion or contraction, it feels like the world really shifts. And in myself, I can feel that this living from an expanded soul place, true self place, requires real faith, because it seems to me that in this realm of expansion, a lot of it is unknown. So to expand into something means it's not known yet. That's how it's occurring to me. And so to walk into any given situation with a kind of an openness and a wondering and a curiosity is very different to wandering in with a set of demands and expectations, and this is how it needs to be. And then the world that gets made out of that is a really different one. I'm just feeling into it, just in kind of even basic, straightforward family interactions. It feels like this is like a scalable thing, you know, it's like a domestic thing of making the breakfast, doing a piece of toast for someone, and also running a company or doing something that involves many, many people. I feel like it, you know, in the same way we were saying about Richard Rohr before, it kind of it has the possibility to be present, this dynamic of different worlds being created in the smallest of things and the biggest of things. And so I feel a little bit like thrown into possibility of like, oh my gosh, these are two different worlds that get made in a way, depending on how, which part of myself I bring and how I relate. Like relating from contraction is very different to relating from soul or true self.
I love this language you're using of different worlds, Lizzie. And I was I was listening to you read, I got very interested in myself in contraction as opposed to what else might be in the midst of something that feels deeply uncertain or of large scale or something I care about. And very often this distinction happens for me in the middle of the things that I care about the most. I'm kind of indifferent to something. But if I really care about something, that's the place that this contraction can happen. And I was noticing as you were speaking, oh yes, yeah, I see that. Family is a great place to talk about it, or community, or things that you and I teach, or you know, anything that really matters. If I pay attention, where this shows up first is in my own body. So contraction is actually contraction.
Mm-hmm.
I can feel myself tightening, my chest tightens, my shoulders tighten, my hands tighten. And I loved this distinction that Richard Rohr made right at the start, where he said the thing about fear and this that moves forward by contraction, self-protection and saying no, is that what it does is it unifies some parts of us. Brings together parts of us, and what it does is it gives us this feeling of focus, purpose, direction, strange kind of security and superiority. And I really get that when I'm afraid, particularly when I'm afraid that something I love might be taken from me or might be damaged or might not happen in the way that I want it. It's very, very easy for that to arise without me even knowing it. And to get into this position of what it produces in me is this really strong sense of, I know what's called for and I am gonna protect what's called for at all costs. And that has all kinds of consequences. Like you were saying, it has consequences for the kind of relationships I can be in it, but more even, and that's really important, but even more than that has consequences for what can get born in that moment, because I'm holding on really tight. And the thing that it's really helping me to see is that all of that comes from an inner move to try to make myself bigger than the something that's frightening me, so I can dominate it, I can be in charge of it, and then I'll feel better. And it's a kind of in the moment, trying to feel secure in the face of something, which leads to all the consequences for relationship and also for really constraining possibility, because I know. And it's feeling to me, and when I do that, I think what's happening is I'm getting to feel less afraid.
Mm.
It's kind of paradoxical something. That in order to really enter into a tender moment of something I care about or people I care about actually requires letting myself feel that I'm afraid, and then not trying to get on top of my fear by making myself too big. And that very often means getting really soft, and it also means getting more honest that I'm afraid.
Mm.
And sometimes, maybe often, if it's possible, with the very people that I'm speaking to, say, I'm afraid about what might happen. I'm afraid that this won't go the way that I want it, but I'm doing my best to have something else in me that's not fear, which I think we would call essential self and Richard Rohr calls true self, the something of us that is, doesn't get caught up in that, to have that enough of that of me be present alongside. And then it's a vulnerable, tender spot actually to be in.
Mm.
But one in which we might well get met by the care and concern of others, and then something new can happen.
Mm. Yeah, I'm feeling into this spot, Justin. You said soft, you know, what's needed is softening. And I can feel at my most kind of controlling moments, that's the last thing that feels possible. And yet it's exactly, as you're saying, the thing that would allow something to be an invitation, like me to be an invitation to someone else coming in as well. There's something about the quality of relationship being so diminished when one is being very controlling about something. And I'm really moved by this invitation to consider that when we're being controlling, we're afraid of losing something, or at least afraid of something. It might not be losing something, but we're afraid. So fear and control are so together. And I'm just feeling really curious about what it means to soften in the midst of a contraction, and how much commitment that takes in the moment, in the body of, when I stand in the body of my controlling part, you know, and wonder what it takes to soften. It's so vulnerable to give that up in a moment, and to let expansion happen. Feels a really big thing. And yet probably everybody around us will say, yes, that's what's needed. You know, they would see that that's exactly what's needed right now, when we're being over domineering or controlling about something, as to use Richard Rohr's language. It's because we're afraid. And what I can also see is me being controlling is also really triggering for other people. So it's a dance that gets made in the moment by this contraction. It's contagious in a way. So I know when I get like, come on, we need to do this now, everyone also contracts. Like it's a kind of, it's like a domino effect almost. I can feel that my domino touches another person's domino-ness, and we end up in everyone's contracting. So I feel really in this moment called to be responsible for that, and to see that, and to use Richard's language again, to deepen, so that I can be aware of what I'm afraid of in the moment. Like I feel like that question needs to keep living on, which is, when I'm being controlling, what am I afraid of? Like, let that be a link that I make, so that, you know, you were saying, like, sometimes when you're afraid, you get kind of bigger and self-justified, and I know exactly what's needed in that kind of inflated place, which is a layer on top of what am I afraid of. In that inflated place, it's really hard to think about what I'm afraid of. But this conversation and these kinds of conversations serve for me to make the link between those two things. So I can say, right, in that moment when I'm feeling contracted, I now have language for and a pathway for connecting my controllingness, my contraction, my tenseness in my body and my words and my actions. What if in that moment I could have the awareness to ask myself what I'm afraid of? And it might not mean that I stop being controlling in the first instance or the 50,000th instance, but at least if there's a connection with fear and an awareness that that's what's happening or what could be happening, I can ask myself a different set of questions when I'm in it. You know, and I'm thinking about, again, like the different scales of things. Like for me, this could be just getting out the door of our house to go somewhere. You know, everyone having a pair of shoes on and a whatever coat they need. You know, sometimes, you know, we have a small little hallway with shoes and crap everywhere and we've got to get out the door. Those are the moments where it feels contracted. And what am I afraid of? I'm probably afraid of being late, probably afraid of being a mess, probably afraid of losing control. You know, when like it feels like all of the cats are out of the bag and there's no way of moving in a direction. Those things, those times feel hard. And those are the small domestic everydaynesses. And then there's the huge big scale of things too, where I get indignant about what people should be doing and what's wrong with the world and how on earth could that be this way. And I can see also that that doesn't help. It doesn't do anything. And in times like these, at the moment, I can see that all of the things that do matter are coming from love, are coming from joy, are coming from connection, coming from compassion. And those things aren't born out of this contraction. They're born out of something really different.
This distinction between fear and love was bubbling up in me as you were speaking, Lizzie, and on the scale of leaving the house, whether with other adults or with young adult, you know, all my children are young adults, but when they were small, I really recognised that. If I would get contracted about, we have to get out the door and we have to get out the door now and everybody has to do it a particular way, what was often very hard for me to see, that I'm seeing afresh now and I'm learning more about now, is, like you said, very often it would be because I was afraid of something. And it might be something like, I'm afraid of what other people will think of me. What kind of parent am I if we're late, or everyone turns up not dressed in the right things, or, you know, we're a mess or something? And in that moment of feeling, I could feel as you were speaking that the inner moment, and I think this really does apply at lots of scales, and I sort of wonder how it applies to anyone who's leading at a national or global scale, and those of us who are leading or wanting to have something right and something intimate, like our family life or in a partnership or something in between, like a community or a project that we're involved in running. But what happens is that the inner contraction of fear is matched by the expansion of the something of us that's not the truest something. So we get bigger, we kind of feel deflated inside, and then we puff up, the fear has us go rigid and big, and now I won't have to feel so afraid and I don't have to feel so small because I'm so certain. And I have found myself sometimes, my experience of it is finding myself sometimes in the midst of something, not even really knowing quite why I'm behaving the way that I am, but sort of stuck in a groove, like I'm really asserting something. I'm going to beat you, Lizzie. I'm going to be right and you're going to be wrong. And I don't even quite know why I'm doing it that way. And I can feel that it's not in line with my deepest intentions, but here I am. Mm. So you were talking about how we sort of ratchet one another up. I also think we just do that, happens inside ourselves.
Yeah.
And of course it's contagious in the way that you say it brings out. It's a really liberating move to go, oh, I must be afraid. And then to name what it is. I'm afraid of what you'll think of me. I'm afraid that this whole project will fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid that my reputation will be ruined. Mm-hmm. I'm afraid I won't know what to do. I'm afraid it won't go the way I want. I'm afraid of how I'll be judged. I'm afraid of what I'll feel. And at that point, it seems to me that we connect with a kind of goodness. We have the possibility of being in contact with this kind of essential goodness that we are, that's able to say, you know what, I can be in the middle of this uncertainty. It's mm-hmm. okay.
Yeah.
Sometimes that certainty that comes from fear is really helpful. If I want to get out of a burning building, sometimes it helps to say the exit is over there, go, and for all of that like energy that comes from it to come up. And I think part of the difficulty is when we're carrying fear, the inner contraction, and this outer sort of grandiosity in places that it's really not called for.
Mm.
Nothing is really at risk when we're leaving the house and we're a bit late.
Mm.
If we're working with people who care about something, nothing is really at risk if we'll slow down and soften and go, let's find out together what's called for, even if it might be different from what I imagined.
Yeah.
So when we're not trying to escape from something that is an immediate existential threat, there are enormous benefits in returning to a kind of mutuality and softness and openness and reciprocity and vulnerability with one another then allows something else to emerge. But we have to get on. I know I have to get on to the learning to notice that I got caught in that escalation that happens. I was listening to a wonderful thing on the radio the other day that was saying that somebody was saying, it came up as you were speaking, that it's really tempting when we're caught in some kind of inner escalation or an escalation between us that feels fiery is to pile on the fire. So you're afraid and you get fiery and that makes me afraid and I get fiery and we go more and more contracted, more and more certain, more and more oppositional, more and more. But another response to fire is water.
Mm-hmm.
And that the counter move is to, I'll just quote Richard Rohr again, to go deeper into ourselves, to see that there's a rebel and a dictator and they're both the same thing. They're both reactive responses to thing, and to go, can I find that which says yes to being right in the middle of this difficulty and isn't trying to get away from it? Can I find that which says yes to there are differences between us and not try to dominate you?
Yeah.
And that kind of yes isn't a yes to, oh, I'll just, I think the fearful parts of ourselves go, well, if I say yes to anything, I'm just going to say yes to everything. Mm-hmm. And what I care about is going to get destroyed here. But that's not that kind of yes that I mean. I mean the kind of yes which goes, okay, here we are. Now what?
Yeah. What's arising for me, Justin, is also the opposite of all of this as well. Like the times in my life where contraction has been necessary or needed, and I've been expansive, to use that language, like when something is not okay and I haven't been able to find true selfness enough to say, no, that's not okay. And I've gone with something, even though it felt like that shouldn't happen. So I feel like there's a really important distinction to be made around, you know, it could sound like we're saying expansion is always the way, saying yes is always the way or something, but it feels like it's not that. There's also like a discernment in it as to from an essential place of what's okay here for me. And there are certain times in my life where I've felt either taken advantage of or have used or walked all over in some horribly undignified way. And I think in a way that's another form of control, though. For me, it's like I sometimes go that way because I can't handle the out of controlness of saying, hold on a second, I don't agree with you, or I'm saying no to that, because that feels much more scary than saying yes. And so I'm kind of controlling the situation by going along with it, because the piece that's unpredictable in it is if I said no, or if I contradicted something, or if I stood up for myself or made a stand for something. So it feels really important to say that, because all kinds of distinctions are necessary inside of this. And, you know, we were talking about if the building's banged down, you run and you need to know where the exit is. And that's exactly what this contraction, the intelligent functionality of contraction is for. It's needed sometimes. So I think the conversation for me is also learning the distinction between when fear is necessary and where it's not. Like you were saying, often we're employing the contraction and the fearfulness at times when it's not relevant. And it feels like it's also possible for me to use the kind of yes expansionness in times when that's not the appropriate thing either. And I can also see that both of them can be means of controlling in different, quite sophisticated ways. Like if I just go along with this, I'm in way more control than if I disrupt. And a big part of I'm a super relational person. Like it really matters to me that people feel okay and that there's harmony and peace and conviviality and togetherness and all those things. And so the opposite of that for me is like learning to be disruptive because something matters is a challenge for me. And there are some people where it's completely different. Some people, it's the normal way is to be a disruptor. The normal way is to be contrary and disagreeing and saying, oh, actually, no. And I'm not like that. I'm much more, well, many people might say the opposite, but that's what my vision of myself is anyway, is that I'm up for everyone getting on with one another, and lots of the time I'll do whatever it takes for that to be true. And so then to stand up for something feels like the uncertain ground that you were talking about. Like if I say that, I've got no idea how you're going to respond. And that's terrifying. Whereas if I say, yes, it's all okay, I kind of know what's going to happen, because that's the way we're already going. That's the momentum that's already been established. So I feel really, really curious about this distinction, and curious into terms of watching myself from a perspective of what am I trying to control by being the expansiveness, by being the yes, by being the smoother, and what am I trying to control when I'm contracted and tense.
I love that you're bringing this in, because I think it's what's missing, what's not included in what Richard Rohr has written about here. He's written about the times when, in response to feeling afraid and diminished, we recruit all the parts of ourselves that are up to self-protection and refusal and being right and make ourselves too big for the relationship or too big for the circumstance, so that we dominate. And what this piece doesn't address that you're addressing is what happens is when we find ourselves in the place that's too small. Because it seems to me, and I know this too, in pursuit of harmony or other people liking me or, you know, whatever it is, of saying yes to things, I do much less now than I used to. But for years and years and years, just say yes to things and feel like I had to say yes. And like you say, it's actually a way of being in control, because what I'm trying to do is control how the other person relates to me. Mm-hmm. But it can mean saying yes to situations which are really far from okay for me. And I is where I'm left here, Lizzie, by you're bringing it in, is that this is, again, a conversation about right sizing.
Mm-hmm.
It's about finding finding of us what Richard Rohr calls true self, and we've sometimes called essential goodness or essential self, or that of us which is alive and appropriately responding to our to what's called for here, this one, and what's called for in the wider something. And I think you described it as that sometimes your yes could be, the expanded yes could be the one that was inappropriate. And what I thought about whilst you were saying was, well, in a way, what's really called for when we find ourselves in that situation, when we're saying yes inappropriately, is the bigness of the yes to ourselves that we haven't been saying yet.
Mm.
So when we can say yes to our own one, this one, that's what enables us to appropriately to say no to something else.
Yeah.
And that's the return from diminishment to right size. Yeah. So it's either from grandiosity to right size when we're being too controlling because of our fear, or it can be from diminishment to right size when we need to include ourselves because we're afraid and trying to control by being too small and fawning and pleasing and all of those kind of things. Or what would it be for us all to attend to the dignity of being a human that allows us to be in that uncertain in-between where things get worked out between us? Where yeah. sometimes things stay the way we want and sometimes they don't, and sometimes better things happen because you and I both were able to listen to one another, and sometimes we have to gracefully concede that I'm not going to have what I want and you are, and that's appropriate.
Yeah.
It's a call to dignity rather than all the ways that we try to protect ourselves from feeling afraid and its consequences.
Yeah. Well, Justin, I think, I don't know, that the main thing that feels really strong in me as we come to the end of this conversation is asking myself what I'm afraid of when I'm feeling controlling. And that maybe if I can do that also in relationship, like I could tell someone, what might that make? What kind of world would that make? So when I'm feeling afraid and it's coming out, it's manifesting itself as being controlling, what if I could say to myself, what am I afraid of? And then see if I could tell someone about it and see what happens. See what world gets made in that moment.
Mm. A beautiful place to end. Mm.
Thank you so much, Justin. Thank you, Richard Rohr. Thank you, everybody, for listening. This is a really beautiful way to start our Sunday. And please reach out to us if you want to. Lizzie@turningtowards.life, Justin@turningtowards.life. You have our website that you can send on to other people, look at yourself, which is turningtowards.life. And we would love to hear from you. So thank you for being with us, and we will see you back here next week on Sunday again.
Bye-bye, everyone.